The world around us is changing rapidly. Fundraisers and nonprofit marketers like you have to be flexible and innovative to continue to overcome the challenges you face. We're Pursuant, and we're here to provide you with the tools, insights, and strategies you need to get you where you want to go. You're tuned in to the Pursuant Listening Experience. It's 2021, and doing things virtually from home, whether it's holiday Zooms with the family, game nights with friends, or religious services, has become the new normal. Last year, we tapped our friend Reggie Rivers at the Gala Team to get his insight into how nonprofits can maximize virtual galas. We got Reggie back on the line to learn how this model has evolved in the subsequent months and what the future might hold for hybrid events. We also dug into the question of who on your donor file are the most valuable candidates to reach through this channel. Hello, everyone. My name is Leah Davenport, and I serve as our Senior Marketing Manager here at Pursuant. And I am thrilled to be joined today by our own Ryan Carpenter, as well as the one and only Reggie Rivers of the Gala Team. So welcome, Ryan and Reggie.
Great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well today. Happy Monday. So Reggie, if you don't mind, I'm just going to kick things over to you. We have had a couple of conversations with you over about the last year or so. We did a podcast episode last year, kind of at the beginning of the pandemic when the big pivot happened and nonprofits kind of scrambled to figure out how to replace lost revenue from galas and events. And your company, the Gala Team, you kind of had the same thing happen. You had a couple of nonprofit clients who were saying, hey, we've had to cancel our galas or make an adjustment. How can we still move forward in this Zoom at home environment and still meet with our major donors and get those gifts that we need to hit our fundraising goals and resource our mission? And so we then did a webinar in July that was focused on, you know, let's follow up on your 4 months into this virtual gala environment. And we also brought in Ryan in that conversation to kind of look at, all right, how do you make sure that you are inviting the right people, that you're following up with the right people who are most engaged and connected with your mission? So now it is February 1, 2021. What have we learned since July?
I know, man, so much time has passed. And, you know, as you said, when COVID first hit, we had 34 events drop off our calendar for April and May. And so my company, we're a benefit auctioneering company, and we help people with their night of event fundraising. And so I say that the three biggest lessons that we've learned since COVID-19 hit is, number one, is you just got to go for it. That, you know, in spring of 2020, there were a lot of nonprofits that were sitting back saying, well, we're going to wait a few weeks and maybe things will be better in the summer. Then in the summer, they're saying, well, we're going to wait a couple of months and maybe things are going to be better in the fall. And then in the fall, they're saying, well, we're going to wait a little bit. Maybe it'll be better in spring of 2021. And now they're saying, well, we're going to wait and maybe it'll be better in the fall of 2021. And what we've seen is that you just have to go for it. For the organizations who just said, we're going to go virtual, we're going to make this attempt, then they get on the road and they're able to overcome whatever challenges they bump into along the way, and they find success with a virtual gala. The second thing that we've learned over this period is your donors are expecting you to go virtual like every other important thing in their lives. You know, your donors, if you think about your key donors, the ones who you are their favorite nonprofit, they're working from home on Zoom, Skype, WebEx, whatever. They prefer to go into the office, but they can't. Their job is important, so their job has gone virtual. Their kids are at home learning at home. They prefer to have their kids in school, but the schools aren't open, so the kids are learning at home because everything that's important has gone virtual. They're doing virtual happy hours, virtual visits with grandma, virtual church services, virtual workouts in the basement, and all because the things that are important to them have all gone virtual. So now when their favorite nonprofit says, we're not going to hold a virtual gala because we're going to wait until the pandemic is over, they're thinking, well, why aren't you? I know a lot of nonprofits are worried our donors aren't going to understand why we're going virtual. And I think it's the opposite. I think your donors are going to wonder why you're not going virtual. So that's point number two. And then finally, point number three, pre-event development work has always been important, but now in this environment, it is so much more important. We are seeing from our clients, you know, we did 61 virtual galas in 2020. And of those events, the ones that had the conversations with their major donors in advance, really knew how to identify those people and have those conversations and get the ball rolling, those are the ones who had great success. They tended to line up 50 to 60% of their total donations before the event even started. And that created this great momentum. And then they exceeded the fundraising goals that they had for themselves. So those are the three things I think that are the biggest lessons that we've learned in this past year.
Thanks, Reggie. I really want to dig into that last point here in a minute. But before I do, I just wanted to kind of dig into this idea with you about, you know, what's the format you've seen work the best for these virtual events? You know, I think I probably heard you at one point talk about brevity. It's important to keep them short. You know, if we're in this virtual, all virtual environment, as you just said, we get tired of staring at screens all day. And so kind of before we get into that last bit about that pre-development work that's so important, what are just some kind of general tips and tricks you can offer about how to maximize the actual event experience?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, if you think about a typical gala is like 4 hours long. You have cocktail hour that starts at 5:30 and you're wrapping things up and start dancing at 9:30. You're not going to take your typical in-person event and try to squeeze it into a virtual format. Your virtual event should be 30 to 45 minutes, ideally. We've seen a few go to an hour. If you have enough variety in your content, you could go to an hour, but really that's about the extent of it. You don't want to try to compete with people's attention spans like that. And you don't have to be that entertaining. Like some of the nonprofits we talk to, they really feel like, oh, well, we've really got to entertain people. We've really got to make it fun. We've really got to somehow replicate that networking experience. And we've seen that it's hard for you to compete now that you're on their computer screen. You're going to have a hard time competing with whatever they like to watch on YouTube or with whatever Netflix series that they're addicted to. And that's not why they're tuning in. I always use the analogy of people don't go to a third grade production of Romeo and Juliet because they love Shakespeare. They go because they love those kids. And people who come to your virtual gala, they're not coming because they're looking for how you can entertain them. They care about your mission. So focus on your mission. Share your progress on your mission. Share the importance of what you're doing. Let them know how they can help you and they will respond. And so we've seen our nonprofits have a lot of success with events that are 30 to 45 minutes long. And then one other point on this, there's basically four different types of virtual events. There's the virtual gala at home where everybody is in their own homes on a Zoom call like we are today, on their own computers. The second type is a virtual gala in a studio. We've got 8 to 10 people in a studio and you're on the stage kind of broadcasting like normal, but there's no audience there. The third, which I think we might get to in late 2021 or early 2022, is a virtual gala with pods where you've got maybe a virtual gala in a studio happening, but at each board member's house, there's a group of 8 to 10 people who are watching it together. And then finally, there's the hybrid event where you have a in-person audience and a virtual audience, and you're going to appeal to both of them. And I expect that in 2022, hybrid events are going to become all the rage.
And you would say beyond as well, right? You don't see that really going away at any point.
Yeah, I really don't. And I think that the hybrid events are going to, they're going to come in three different forms that are really based on who's your audience. If your in-person audience is your focus, then I'd say that's like a Broadway musical style where the experience is meant to be for the people who are in the audience. Their sight lines have to be protected. Their sound for them has to be perfect. Everything is set up for them. The second type would be where your audience at home is most important. That's more like the Saturday Night Live model. If you're at Saturday Night Live in person, yeah, your sight line might be impaired. The cameras, the cue cards might get in your way. You see the back end of the sausage making. You see the set changes during commercial breaks, and you hear the director yelling things out when you're not on air. And so that's the second type, which nonprofits might do if their major donors are at home and they just got a few people in the room for energy. But then the third type, which Ryan, to your point, that I think is going to be forever with us, is where both audience, the virtual and the in-person, are equally important. And so that's more like an NFL football broadcast where the in-person experience is one thing, the at-home audience has a play-by-play guy, color commentator, instant replays, multiple camera angles, graphics, all of this stuff that's designed just for them who are watching at home. And I see that being the long-term future of hybrid events in the nonprofit world.
So many ways I could take this conversation that are really compelling. One of which is just this idea that, like, increasingly nonprofits and organizations are sort of the marketing and fundraising arms, have to function a lot like a kind of traditional media company. But I think that'll send us down a rabbit trail. So I want to kind of come back around to this idea that, Ryan, I'd love for you to weigh in on, is who's attending these events? One of the beautiful things about a hybrid event or a full virtual event is that you're not limited to the size of the room. And so you could potentially invite your entire file. And in some way, I think that is a tremendous benefit of a virtual event. But you still need to find ways to create that white glove treatment, especially in follow-up, for those most valuable supporters who in the past were maybe the main attenders of your galas and in-person events. So Ryan, you know, how do nonprofits kind of make those decisions and prioritize people?
When we first got together and spoke about virtual events in July, we made some assumptions on who you should consider inviting, because again, you can open up the audience and the attendee list. You still want to focus on who the primary people are, as Reggie has mentioned, but that doesn't mean you can't invite more people. It's virtual. You can send it to thousands of individuals. But we also had some thoughts on who do you want to be there? Who else do you want to invite? And so, you know, blending in wealth and affinity for your type of cause from those prospects potentially that could make that upgrade to become a meaningful, high-value donor. Also, channel preference. We talked about understanding the people that were comfortable online, that, you know, had the technical aptitude to log on to your event. You wanted to reach those people. That's the priority. You wanted people that had prospects to upgrade their support, that had an affinity, and also are going to be able to log in seamlessly and be able to attend this event. Now, what's really interesting, since that time, the 6-7 months, we've had a number of our clients hold virtual events. And the individuals that supported those events and made gifts, you know, there's some key trends that we're seeing that are both very intuitive, but also, you know, do stand out. They are slightly younger. And that speaks to people's comfort level online. I know everybody's grandparent has been Zooming for almost a year now. That doesn't mean they love it or are, you know, likely to take the opportunity to join your event. They also have more wealth, and we're seeing a higher average gift rate. And that's pretty common. Individuals that give online typically give a greater average gift. And so if they're giving at a higher level, you can make the next assumption that, okay, they do on average have a higher net worth or higher wealth level. Then lastly, we do see that 90% of these virtual event donors do have a preference to engage digitally. And that's compared to the total file amongst our clients, where you see about 2/3 of your file have a likelihood to prefer the digital channel preference. You know, we do that through our Giving DNA platform, and we can have these insights provided. But you can also look at it historically, how have they engaged with you, whether it's through making online gifts or attending other things virtually, responding to emails. And that can help you understand channel preference. And because again, it's intuitive, but now we have the results to back it, where those people that have a digital preference, they're going to be more comfortable. To Reggie's point, they're going to be comfortable being at the virtual event, listening, watching, taking things in, whereas somebody that doesn't have a preference to engage digitally, they just make feel a little bit unbalanced. And you know, that's not going to give them the experience they want.
Are you asking questions about your fundraising data, but are struggling to find actionable insights? Pursua's Giving DNA platform is here to help. We combine your constituent data, donation data, third-party information, and tack on augmented intelligence to provide you with insights about who is giving to you, what motivates them to give, and which channels through which they prefer to engage. The platform also comes baked in with opportunity segments that show you who is most likely to give a large gift, is most likely to lapse, and most likely to give monthly. All this and much more is at the fingertips of fundraisers like you. No IT or data analyst required. Learn more at pursuant.com/givingDNA-platform today.
It's funny, Ryan, you mentioned our grandparents are getting more comfortable. My parents just bought their first laptop ever. My 79-year-old dad, 78-year-old mom, talking to my sister, getting their laptop set up. And the entire reason is so they can Zoom with their family. They've been using Zoom on their phones, and they're like, we need a laptop. And yeah, it is crazy how much of the audience is getting more and more adapted to being in part of a virtual experience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I help my father every Sundays with his various laptop questions. So I appreciate his desire to learn and get comfortable, but Sunday afternoon, he's coming over with a laptop.
Well, and what's interesting about all that is I almost wonder, like, how many nonprofits, when they are gearing up for these like online events, might include some sort of like rudimentary technology guide, like how to help your grandparents or anything, you know, people in your life who are generous people, who, you know, have engaged in with an organization in the past, but might be a little bit behind the curve when it comes to technology. I wonder if there are resources that nonprofits are starting to produce to kind of help ease everyone's way into this new reality.
I think that that's very smart to do that. And I think that nonprofits should be changing their messaging a little bit to their supporters to say, to help their supporters promote this charity to their friends and family. That in the past, you might not, if you're a Denver-based nonprofit, for example, I live in Denver, you're a Denver-based nonprofit, let's say you're a private school. You might not really work, private school is a bad example, you probably would work hard to get the grandparents in, but you know, you're an organization, you might not be working that hard to get your donors to tell their extended families about what it is they're doing. But now that COVID has hit, like I have one of my nieces, she sent out on Facebook and tagged all of our family members, and she's an elementary school teacher. She said, I'm trying to build the library at my school, and for my birthday present, I would love it if you guys would help me purchase 33 books. And she had picked out all these books that she wanted. Well, she ended up with like 133 books because everybody in the family just jumped in and did it. And I don't know anything about her school. I don't even know what town it's in. I don't know anything. I just know I love my niece. And I think that more and more nonprofits are going to discover in this virtual setting, we can lean more on the love that the family members have for whoever it is who you're connected with. And we just have to message it, teach your people how to message it properly to their friends and family.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's great. That's really something I'm going to take with me to my clients.
For sure. Well, and it's something that sparked for me is a friend of mine and I have recently been discussing the way that platforms like Instagram and companies on Instagram, like for-profit companies, leverage the platform to grow their audiences. And one thing that is kind of interesting that you might know is that we're all kind of familiar with like the Instagram influencer, the person with thousands and thousands of followers, and brands will pay them, you know, very handsomely to post about their product or something to all of their followers. But what brands have actually been discovering is almost more powerful on Instagram and is far cheaper is to ask regular people with a few hundred followers to post about their restaurant, their product, their whatever it is that they want, because it seems a lot more authentic coming from someone who's just a regular old social media user. And you, even if you're only going to be picking up a few tens of customers from that outreach, it seems much more organic and authentic and is a lot cheaper because all you have to do is give the person, you know, a small kickback or a coupon or something that's not nearly as expensive as getting like Kim Kardashian to show off your new purse or something. But anyway, all that to say, the thing that I take away from that is we often, I think, don't fully comprehend or appreciate the amount of influence that some people in your file who are avid social media users, who are avid digital users, actually have to spread your brand's message, to spread the cause of your nonprofit. And so, Ryan, I just want to kind of tie this back into technology. You know, like we can find people who are high social media or who are regular social media users, and they might be an additional group of people that you would target with a message about an event like this.
Yeah, so we've actually been doing something very similar using social media data to identify who our highly active users are, who our quote unquote influencers are, which we just categorize people that are really heavy users that have followings as influencers. They are not a celebrity. They could be if you have a celebrity on your file, but that's not the intent. And so we've been doing it for things like Giving Tuesday, identifying all of your heavy active users and influencers on file, and then emailing them a message to say, we'd love for you to share this. If you could share this post. And we have some great results, great stories where we're seeing a lot of individuals also give, right, without being asked, which is something that you can often see through pure cultivation. But also we are acquiring new donors. They're being exposed to a new network of people that they never would have before. And it's bringing in new donors as well. So that's something we've seen for Giving Tuesday primarily, but it could certainly be something that you could position through these events. I think it's a great idea.
Well, we just have a few minutes left. And so Reggie, I want to return things to you. But in terms of the pandemic, we know that it seems like mass vaccination, even though it's underway, is a few months off. And so we've already kind of talked about this idea that going into later 2021, 22, it looks like hybrid events are here to stay. So let's kind of land the plane in this idea of pre-development work. Could you open up a little bit more about some of the things that clients you're working with are doing to cultivate those donors ahead of the event and make sure that the virtual event itself is kind of the capstone of a fundraising effort and it isn't the whole piece of it? And how can fundraisers structure their campaign in such a way to set it up for maximum efficacy?
Right. Well, I think that you use the proper word, which is campaign. I think that in the initial phases, the virtual galas went really well because all of the work had already been done. They were planning an in-person gala and they had to pivot at the last minute, but all their sponsorships were already sold. All their tickets were already sold. All their donors already had an appointment with them for that night. So everything went really well. And then we got into the summer and the early fall and things lagged off a little bit. It wasn't quite as easy. And it became clear that that work that they had done for those spring events, that work just allowed them to still be successful and virtually. So then the fall group started doing a campaign where they would identify, they'd look at the last couple of years, who gave to us, which board members do we know are going to give a gift every year? And I need to reach out to them and have a phone call or get on a Zoom call with them and tell them what we're doing. We're doing this virtual event. We really need your help and support and getting them pre-committed before the event. And so if you hold a virtual gala and you think that money is going to fall out of the sky, you're just going to open up virtually and people are going to tune in digitally and say, hey, yeah, here's 10 grand. It doesn't happen like that. It's the old school blocking and tackling of understanding who your donors are, why they're committed to you, not just how much money they have, but why they have an affinity for you. What is it that they care about? And then having a conversation with them and getting them lined up. And so we've seen quite a few of our nonprofits have really great outcomes when they turn this fundraising into a campaign that culminates with their virtual gala.
Ryan, anything to add before we wrap up?
Not really. I think just as I had mentioned, my perspective about who you want to identify, certainly also post-event analysis, who attended, who supported you, who made a gift. Because again, much like any campaign or event you have, where you're then going to understand who the donors are, you want to continue to do that here. You may have, a new donor may have joined on that has real high potential to be a major supporter down the road. And so next year when you do the hybrid, you want to invite them to be part of that in-person audience. So that's something I would just continue to do that. And, you know, as well as the invite list too.
Well, Ryan, Reggie, thank you so much for joining us today. This was a really interesting discussion. I always love it when we can sit down and kind of pull up our telescopes and look down the road a little bit. And so just thank you. Thank you both for your time and for sitting down to open up some of these topics for our listeners and viewers. And I look forward to the next time we sit down and discuss our learnings.
Thank you, Leah.
Yeah, great. Reggie, always great when we get to meet and speak and talk shop. And Leah, thanks as well.